20 years, 1,000 voices, and one book. Not one conference, not one article, not one debate, and not one moment. This book emerged from 20 years of conversations, 20 years of bringing people together to discuss forces that were reshaping our lives long before most institutions were prepared to acknowledge them. Welcome to The Last Commons, Reclaiming Personal Sovereignty. I'm Perry Kincaid, the author. This audiobook is personal to me because the book itself is personal. It's not simply a research project or an academic exercise. It's the culmination of more than two decades of organizing gatherings, moderating discussions, hosting webinars, publishing newsletters, interviewing experts, and listening carefully to people trying to understand where society is heading. This journey began 20 years ago through the Alberta Council of Technology Society, ABC Tech, and continues today through the KEI network. Over those years, I had the privilege of bringing together entrepreneurs and psychologists, physicians and engineers, educators, artists, economists, even futurists, public servants, students, technology leaders, and just ordinary citizens. Some were optimistic, some deeply concerned, some enthusiastic about technological progress. Others worried about what was quietly being lost beneath that progress. But beneath their differences, one thing became increasingly clear to me. The forces reshaping society were not isolated. They were converging. At first, the conversation centered around innovation and economic opportunity. Well, there was discussion about artificial intelligence, machine learning, analytics, and cloud computing. And there was fusion energy, biotechnology, cell therapies, precision medicine, clean tech. We discussed the angst of today's youth, the future of professions, the commercialization of technology, and impediments to economic resilience and the status of the innovation ecosystem. And there was education and the future of work. But beneath those discussions, another layer slowly emerged. People increasingly sensed that something deeper was happening, not merely technological disruption, but a transformation in the relationship between people, institutions, and systems themselves. Many individuals could not fully explain what they were feeling, but they felt it, a growing fragmentation, a growing uncertainty, a growing exhaustion, a sense that the systems surrounding them were becoming larger, faster, more complex, and increasingly beyond their influence or understanding. And eventually I realized that what concerned me most was not simply technology, it was the erosion of sovereignty. Not only national sovereignty, but personal sovereignty. The ability of individuals to remain thoughtful and independent, resilient, and fully human within systems increasingly designed to influence behavior, to automate judgment, and capture their attention. The realization became the foundation of this book. But before I delve into why I wrote the book, I want you to know that while I am the writer, there were numerous helpers acknowledged in the beginning of the book. And in the appendix is an index of the names of over 1,000 people. Yeah, 1,039, probably including you, and their contributions to the 20-year journey. The book is really about them, you. And to them, I want to say thank you for the trust. So for part one, let me tell you why I wrote this book. I didn't write the book because I opposed technology, and in many ways, my career has been spent exploring its promise. Over and over again, as a consultant with KPMG, I was confronted with the unresolved challenge of increasing the economic resilience of a province whiplashed by crude oil pricing volatility. An answer was in innovation, to diversify the economy through the commercialization of emerging technologies. Not so easy. For years through ABC Tech and later the KEI network after I retired, I examined through newsletters and an array of studies and events, emerging technologies and their implications long before they became mainstream public discussion. We, you and I, explored artificial intelligence before most people had heard of generative AI or even ChatGPT. We examined the future professions before universities seriously questioned whether credential systems themselves might become destabilized. We discussed analytics, machine learning, commercialization, energy transitions and societal transformation, while many institutions still viewed these subjects as distant possibilities. Technology fascinated me, still does. But over time, another realization emerged. Technology was advancing faster than society's ability to psychologically, institutionally, even emotionally or ethically, absorb its consequences. That gap troubled me deeply. Because throughout history, civilizations have not merely been tested by invention, they've been tested by adaptation. I began noticing something else. The more advanced systems became, the more dependent people became upon those systems, systems they no longer understood. People carried devices more powerful than the computers that once guided spacecraft to the moon. Yet many individuals increasingly struggled to sustain focus, to maintain their independent judgment or meaningful reflection. Information had exploded, yet understanding often declined. Connectivity increased, yet loneliness increased alongside it. Institutions became larger and more sophisticated, yet trust weakened. Technology promised empowerment, and yet many individuals quietly felt less control over their lives. That contradiction sits near the heart of this book. The last commons emerged from 20 years of observing this contradiction unfold across almost every sector of society, across education and government, healthcare, media, technology and business, community life. Again and again, the same pattern reemerged everywhere. Institutions increasingly optimize themselves for administration, scale, metrics, efficiency, and system preservation, but often at the expense of relationships, adaptability, trust, and meaning. Universities measured publication rather than practical relevance. Governments focused on management rather than long-term adaptation. Corporations optimized quarterly performance while weakening resilience. Media increasingly competed for emotional activation instead of understanding. And social media transformed public discourse into continuous performance. As complexity increased, many citizens became overwhelmed, not simply by information, but by the inability to meaningfully process it. That's when I began thinking more deeply about the commons, not the historical commons of shared land, but the invisible commons that allows civilization itself to function. I think of trust, of dialogue, mutual recognition, of shared responsibility, independent judgment, simply the ability to think together without demanding identical conclusions, the ability to disagree without hatred, the ability to remain human inside systems increasingly optimized for efficiency and influence, the capacity to listen rather than argue, to listen rather than lecture. That, I came to believe, was the true commons, now under threat, and perhaps the last one remaining. Okay, let's now turn to the book itself, the preface. In the preface, I write that societies depend not only upon physical infrastructure, the roads, pipelines, power grids, transportation systems, and communication networks, but they also depend upon an invisible infrastructure, a relational infrastructure, a cognitive infrastructure, a moral infrastructure. The systems of trust, of credibility, of cooperation, and shared understanding that allow societies to function peacefully. Without those invisible systems, physical systems alone cannot sustain civilization. Banks depend on trust. Healthcare depends upon trust. Education depends upon trust. Democracy depends upon trust. Even markets themselves depend upon trust. And trust, once fractured, is extraordinarily difficult to restore. That, the central argument of the last commons, is that many societies are now experiencing erosion, not only of institutions, but of the invisible connective tissue that allows those institutions to function. The commons is deteriorating, not through conquest, but through fragmentation. Attention is fragmented. Communities are fragmented. Identity is fragmented. Truth itself increasingly feels fragmented. Entropy is taking its toll. Modern citizens are continuously bombarded by stimulation, outrage, fear, advertising, ideology, algorithmic persuasion, and information overload before they even begin their day. The result is, well, exhaustion. And exhausted populations become vulnerable populations, vulnerable to manipulation, vulnerable to fear, vulnerable to dependency. One of the most important realizations that emerged while I was writing this book was that modern authoritarianism may not always arrive through force imposed from above. Sometimes such dependency emerges voluntarily from below. People surrendering judgment in exchange for convenience, surrendering resilience in exchange for comfort. They surrender reflection in exchange for stimulation, and gradually sovereignty weakens. Not because freedom is seized dramatically, but because capability quietly erodes. That concern runs throughout the book. Yet despite these concerns, I remain optimistic, not naively optimistic, but deeply hopeful that human potential, because throughout these 20 years, I also witnessed remarkable creativity, intelligence, courage, and yes, goodwill. I saw people from vastly different backgrounds sit together respectfully and think openly. I saw innovators trying sincerely to solve difficult problems. I saw communities attempting to preserve dignity and meaning in increasingly mechanized systems. I saw youth rising above the crowd with imagination and confidence. I came to believe that the future will not ultimately be decided by technology alone. It will be dependent by whether humanity preserves the qualities technology cannot fully replace. I mean creativity. I mean empathy, moral judgment, purpose, even responsibility and imagination. These unique human qualities are the ones that allow people to remain sovereign in an age of intelligent systems. Okay, now let's turn to the diagnosis in chapter one. The chapter is entitled "The Infrastructure We Can No Longer See." I've given you a hint to what I mean here. Chapter one begins with an idea that became increasingly important to me over the years. The most important infrastructure in society is not its physical infrastructure, but it's what is often invisible. When people hear the word infrastructure, they usually think about the airports and the highways, as I've noted earlier, the pipelines, electrical grids and communication systems, transportation networks, ports and railways. These physical systems matter enormously, but civilizations also depend upon invisible infrastructure, the trust, the shared assumptions, the civic responsibility, the credibility, the social adhesion, the social cohesion that keeps us together, the mutual recognition, the ability of strangers to cooperate peacefully, to listen, not to lecture. Without these invisible systems, physical infrastructure alone cannot sustain stability. Over the years, through conferences, webinars, articles, and discussions, I watched institutions struggle increasingly with this reality. Technical competence no longer guaranteed legitimacy. People questioned motives. They questioned transparency. They questioned incentives. And often they had good reason to do so. Meanwhile, the very systems governing modern life became so complex that even experts increasingly struggled to fully understand them. Artificial intelligence accelerated this dramatically. Invisible systems now shape what people see, believe, purchase, prioritize, and fear. Algorithms influence attention. Platforms shape discourse. Recommendation systems guide perception. Data increasingly shapes opportunity itself. Lots of convenience. And yet most citizens understand very little about the architecture surrounding them. In fact, they don't pay a lot of attention to it. And this creates a profound imbalance. As systems become more intelligent, individuals risk becoming more dependent, not because freedom is formally removed, but because that convenience gradually replaces capability. We are outsourcing our memory to devices. We are navigating to algorithms. Our attention to platforms, our decision-making to systems, and over time, resilience weakens quietly beneath the surface. One of the themes introduced in chapter one is the difference between comfort and resilience. Modern societies have become extraordinarily successful at producing comfort. But resilience is something different. Comfort depends upon stable systems. Resilience depends upon adaptable people. And when disruption arrives, financial disruption, technological disruption, social disruption, institutional disruption, you know what I mean? When we're feeling it today, the distinction becomes critically important. The danger today is not simply external shocks. The danger is society is losing the ability to adapt internally, personally. That applies to governments, to universities, to corporations, to communities, because they're all populated by individuals. Yet chapter one is not anti-technology, far from it. Throughout my years with ABC Tech and KEI Network, I consistently explored the transformative potential of innovation. Technology can elevate humanity tremendously. Artificial intelligence may solve scientific problems well beyond current human capacity. Fusion energy may transform civilization. Biotechnology may extend a healthy life. Automation may reduce dangerous labor. And connectivity may allow unprecedented collaboration on a world scale. But technology amplifies underlying values, which means societies must decide what they are optimizing and what for. Efficiency alone is not enough. Profit alone is not enough. Control itself is not enough. Human flourishing must remain central. That must be the reason for optimizing efficiency and profit and control. Human flourishing must remain central. Otherwise, systems may become highly functional, while human beings themselves become psychologically exhausted, socially fragmented, spiritually adrift, and increasingly irrelevant. In chapter one, I also introduced an idea that would continue throughout the book. The future may no longer primarily reward knowledge alone. Machines increasingly possess knowledge. Artificial intelligence increasingly masters how. Human beings must rediscover why. Why something matters. Why values matter. Why purpose matters. Why judgment matters. Why responsibility matters. Why we matters. That distinction may ultimately define sovereignty in the 21st century. So in closing, this first episode explored why The Last Commons was written and the meaning of the preface and the foundations introduced in chapter one. But more than that, it reflects 20 years of observing a civilization entering profound transition, not merely technological transition, but civilizational transition. The book itself is ultimately an invitation to think more deeply, to question more honestly, to participate more consciously. It's about us, and to recognize that sovereignty begins not with controlling others, but with governing oneself. 20 years, 1,000 voices, and one continuing question. Can humanity remain fully human in an age increasingly shaped by intelligent systems? I believe the answer is yes, but only if we recognize what is being lost and what must still be reclaimed. Well, thank you for listening to episode one of The Last Commons, Reclaiming Personal Sovereignty. The diagnosis will continue with chapter two, A Globe Under Siege, that extends the discussion to the stresses enveloping and converging, with AI expediting the stress as the integrating force.